This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Kentucky General Assembly's 2015 session came to an end Tuesday night with a flurry of activity. Later in the show, we'll hear about the key legislation that was passed, as well as some things that weren't. But first, Cincinnati City Manager Harry Black recently appointed Thomas Corey as the city's Economic Inclusion Executive Project Director. Mr. Corey will oversee the city's newly formed Department of Economic Inclusion. Harry Black and Thomas Corey join us to discuss the city's redefined efforts to improve the local economy by boosting opportunities for minority and women-owned businesses. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Harry and Tom, I really appreciate both of you coming in, especially at a difficult time for the city with the loss of firefighter Daryl Gordon. His death is such a shock to so many people in this community, and I imagine his fellow firefighters really must be feeling it today. What's the support been like from other communities and their fire departments, Harry?
The support has been phenomenal. I believe that they're working to schedule his funeral service for sometime next week. We expect there to be hundreds of fellow firefighter law enforcement officials just visiting Cincinnati to pay their respects to firefighter Gordon and his family.
And you heard from fire departments and cities and all over the country, haven't you?
Yeah, calls have been coming in from everywhere.
Now, what's the status of the investigation into his death?
Well, obviously, with something like this, you've got to be very methodical and very careful, and it's about the details. So there will be several different types of investigations that are already underway. Some can likely be wrapped up within maybe 90 to 120 days, and some could take much longer than that.
Now, I understand that also there is a fund that's been set up for Daryl Gordon's family. People can contribute to that?
Yes.
And that's Kemba Credit Union is handling that fund?
I believe so.
Okay. And you were saying the funeral arrangements, they're not quite set yet, are they?
I think they're almost, but I don't believe that they're finalized as of yet.
Well, again, our condolences to Daryl Gordon's family and his friends and his coworkers. It's a tough time.
Yeah, it's very tough. It's tough. I mean, it's just another stark reminder that you know, these are very, very dangerous jobs. Our firefighters, our police officers, they come in, they protect us, they take care of us, but they do put their lives on the line and at risk every time they go to work, and that's a very sobering reality of what they do.
Yeah, I think you're so right about that. And I think a lot of us take it for granted as well.
I think we do, which is why when we have such a tragedy like yesterday, it's very sobering. You know, it wakes you up very quickly.
Yeah, it does. Well, Harry, the Department of Economic Inclusion is getting underway. Now, this is a reorganization of the city's current Office of Contract Compliance, from what I understand. Tell me what led to the creation of this new office.
Well, going back a year, like I said, I've been here for about 6 months now as city manager, but I believe going back just a little over a year, Mayor John Cranley spearheaded and initiated and through the establishment of the Economic Inclusion Advisory Council to start looking at how do we sort of level the playing field, how do we increase access, equal access to the opportunity to do business with the city. And it's his brainchild, and the council has put forth his recommendations, and now it is my job, along with the help of Tom, to operationalize those recommendations.
Now, when it comes to opportunities for minority and women-owned businesses, can you give me a before and after picture how Cincinnati been doing business prior to the creation of this new department, and how are things going to be different once this new department's completely rolling?
Well, right now, the city has a small business enterprise program, but it does not have a minority business nor women business enterprise element, but that's what we're working towards, and we should have that in place very soon. The numbers look pretty bad. You're talking low single digits. And when I say low single digits in terms of utilization, I'm talking like in the 2% to 3% area category. However, not waiting for us to put in place a formal MBE-WBE program, the mayor has also initiated what we're calling the Fast Track Program, whereby we're pulling in women-owned businesses, minority-owned businesses, and trying to, on a one-on-one basis, getting them tied into the process and helping them to better understand the process and providing some level of technical assistance so that they can be successful as they compete for city contracts. And that program has been going very, very well. The numbers are phenomenal. So there'll be a very significant improvement already over the previous year's numbers just based on the mayor's fast track initiative. And then once we put this more formalized program in place, it'll be the results will be even more significant.
Tom, talk about your role as the executive director of this whole project.
Well, basically, I've been asked by the mayor and the city manager to come in and, as Harry said, operationalize the whole process. To get the department set up. We're in the process of doing that now. We're staffing up the office. We're working with the city manager and helping to more centralize the procurement process. We want to get a race and gender-based program on the books because as we look around and look at the numbers, they're very dismal with regards to participation of minorities in city procurement. And we think the race and gender-based initiative is the best way to go to get folks, provide folks with an equal opportunity to participate in the program. And we hope to get that going within the next couple of months, at least get it on the books and get some people in there doing some work for the city. Right now, folks, their attention is not turned toward the city. They're looking elsewhere for opportunities. We want them to come to the city of Cincinnati, somewhere they pay their taxes, they live or whatever, and get the benefits of being a resident of the city of Cincinnati. And I think we can do that.
Now we're talking about the numbers being pretty dismal. I mean, the single digits for inclusion.
We're looking at single digits, 2% of the city's dollars, which in my characterization of it, it's 1960s numbers.
Oh, my heavens. Well, do you have specific goals that you're trying to achieve with this program?
Yes. Basically, the biggest goal and the single most pressing goal is to put folks in a position to have an equal opportunity to participate in the procurement process. As far as numerical goals, we will work on that based on the results of our disparity study. But that is the goal of the program. If we can do that, we are on our way to some significant success.
What are some of the things, Tom, that the city can do to achieve these goals? What kinds of things are we talking about?
Well, the biggest thing they can do with contracts that are coming out that are awarded to primes is require that prime contractors have to use minority and women-owned businesses as subcontractors on these contracts. And by doing that, that assures these folks some business opportunity and gives them an additional way of growing capacity in their company. Because in order to have a real balanced business model, you need both some private and public sources of contracts. And that's what this program will do. It'll give the public sector, you'll be able to participate in public sector procurement. Right now, it's almost nothing. And we have to change that. It's just kind of sad at this point, but we're going to make a change in that.
Harry, I've read that Procter & Gamble is a part of this. What kind of role are they playing?
I think that the group from Procter & Gamble are still fleshing out actually what they would like their role to be. I've had an initial meeting with them. It was very productive meeting, but where they are at this point is I believe that they're still trying to scope out what they or how they believe or would like to be supportive and helpful to the process.
And they're pretty good at economic inclusion at Procter & Gamble, aren't they, Tom?
They are. From what I've learned thus far, they're pretty good at it. And we need companies like Procter & Gamble and some of the other larger companies to participate in our procurement opportunities because they're the ones that can provide the subcontracting opportunities for the smaller companies. If they're in there bidding as primes, then we can be assured that the folks can get opportunities to participate in procurement process as subcontractors with these larger entities.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. You can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Tom, before you came to Cincinnati, you were overseeing the legal and administrative functions of a similar department in Baltimore. Now, how is that program doing at boosting opportunities for minority and women-owned businesses? And is it serving as a role model to some extent for Cincinnati?
To some extent, it is. It was doing well. It was doing real well because it provided contracting opportunities to minority and women-owned business on a consistent basis, because every contract coming out of the city of Baltimore had to have minority and women-owned business participation on it. And the programs work really well if the leadership at the top, in this instance, the mayor, the city manager, the city council, if they're all behind the program, it'll be successful. And that was one of the keys to the success of the Baltimore program. Everybody in the chain were in full support of the program. And so we had some really good results with participation by minority and women-owned businesses.
Now, were there other cities that you looked to for guidance as you were constructing Cincinnati's program?
Yes, there were two fact-finding trips that took place. One was to the city of Cleveland, Ohio, and then we also visited the city of Atlanta.
Okay. And you're taking ideas, I take it, from Baltimore, from Cleveland, and from Atlanta. They're all going to
best
be melded
practices.
In.
Best practices.
We're taking ideas from every source that we can, and I'm doing the research so that we can put together one of the best programs that can be out there, and one that will ensure inclusion.
Now, since this, you know, could appear to be favoring one group over another in awarding contracts for city businesses, is there the potential of any legal challenges to this kind of a program?
I'll take a stab at it, Tom, and then I'll throw the ball over
to
you.
Let Tom have a shot at it.
Someone will likely challenge this program because that's what happens from time to time, which is one of the factors as to why I really went after Tom for the job, and he can talk more about it because he's already gone through three challenges successfully. So we hope that it doesn't happen, but if it does, we will be more than ready to deal with it. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, well, we will. But what we have with these programs, there are always somebody out there wanted to challenge it. That's why we do what some folks call a Croson study. We call it a disparity study, which then provides what's called in the law a factual predicate for the establishment of a race and gender program. And we try to get that in place to have it before we put such an ordinance on the books. And that's it. There would be some folks out there who want to challenge it. We had three challenges in the city of Baltimore. And what is significant is that each time that the program was either stopped or enjoined, the city went back, corrected whatever the court said was wrong with the program, and we started it all over again. And we kept doing that. And on the third try, we had some tremendous success because we told the plaintiffs, look, we're going to fight you toe-to-toe, just as we did before. And when we walked into the courtroom, the judge looked at the plaintiff and said, you know, I don't think you guys are going to make it this time. And so halfway through the trial, they dismissed their suit.
You're not going to make it this time because you're dealing with a pretty determined bunch here, I imagine.
A pretty determined bunch, and we'd gone back and retooled the program based on what that same judge had said in the last challenge. And so... so we were real happy with that.
Yeah, and I just really can't emphasize enough that the essence of what we're trying to do here is we're trying to establish to the extent that we can equal access to the opportunity to compete for city business.
That's correct. Yeah.
Now, you're talking about the disparity study. Any idea, have the results from that come back yet?
We'll be coming out with the results in the next couple of weeks. I'm almost certain that we'll be finished with it. And it's looking positive, very positive.
I was going to say, is there any sense of whether the results are going to justify this project?
I believe it's going to justify this project.
We'll continue our conversation about the city's economic inclusion efforts. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU, and you can join us at 513-419-7100.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. We're talking about the City of Cincinnati's economic inclusion efforts with City Manager Harry Black and Thomas Corey, who is the city's Economic Inclusion Executive Project Director. If you'd like to join our conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org. Or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And how long, Harry, did you and Tom work together in Baltimore? How many years was that?
Just a little under 3 years.
A little under 3 years?
Yeah.
But between the two of you, what are your thoughts on how Cincinnati and Baltimore compare, some of the challenges that each of the cities face?
I'll start out, Tom. There are a lot of similarities. Both are very much neighborhood-based.
Yes.
You've got Rust Belt City, and in the recovery mode. So Baltimore is in the recovery mode, doing well. Economy is growing. And Cincinnati, I think Cincinnati is probably growing somewhat faster than Baltimore, but they're both on the upswing, and they're very neighborhood-based. You know, when I got here, you know, I heard that the high school question is the question here. But guess what?
That is I've heard that many times myself.
That's identical to Baltimore.
Yes.
It's about where you went to high school.
So we're not unique?
Well, I think Cincinnati and Baltimore are unique in that regard. I've got a story that I can tell you about the high school thing in Baltimore. I was at a city council meeting, and I had just gotten to Baltimore, and it was a very contentious issue being discussed. And the gentleman who was leading the discussion is a very, very powerful and influential minister, does a tremendous amount of good work in the community. He ran out of, I was leaving the council chambers, he ran out to catch me to say, "Hey, Harry, I want you to know that I went to Dunbar High School also." And then the chief of staff who I worked for, he says, "Harry, I can't even get the guy to give me a conversation." I said, but that's definitely a similarity between the two.
Common problem. Tom, what are your thoughts on the Cincinnati, Baltimore, how they compare, similar challenges, different things?
There's some real good comparisons. One of the biggest things that I've noted, that in Baltimore, it's a growing city. Cincinnati is also, and I think there are going to be tremendous opportunities for folks going forward. They're there. If people will just take the time to look, we're going to be doing some things to produce these opportunities. But Cincinnati is really on the rise, and you can just feel it as you, if you look around the city, this whole idea of putting together a stronger procurement process is going to produce great opportunities for people in business. All they have to do is watch us and take advantage of what we're going to do here.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. Let's talk with John in Western Hills. Good afternoon, John. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
How do you do? I just came into the conversation very recently, just a few moments ago. But I'm aware of other communities that have implemented a racial impact study for projects in their communities that exceed $100,000. This is done in, I believe, in Denver and other parts of this country, but also been widely done in the United Kingdom. And, you know, we do economic impact studies for those projects, and we do environmental impact studies. I think the future of our community is dependent on us being sensitive to the racial and economic inclusion opportunities that we present today for the future of our community. And
okay.
I just wonder if your guests have thought of that or heard of that.
Okay. Thanks, John.
John, you raise a very, very critical point. The idea is to grow the economy, expand economic prosperity. And how do you do that? You do that by allowing and providing for employment opportunities. Mm-hmm. Why this is important, and what I hear you saying, and I agree, is that the wider the net that we can cast in terms of the different types of businesses competing and winning city business means that they're going to hire different people too. And that's going to help us out as a society in general. So the key is to leverage and maximize that multiplier effect with respect to the community.
Tom,
exactly right. we have to make sure that all segments of our economy are included in the procurement process. That's how you're going to impact your unemployment rate. And it's very crucial for the economic health of Cincinnati.
Let's speak with Jenny in Linwood. Good afternoon, Jenny. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for taking my call. My question is similar to John's in a little bit different vein. I'm very concerned about living wage issues and benefit packages and adequate training for all of our workers, especially through city contracts. So I'd like to hear how that's being considered, and particularly for small businesses. I'm a very small business owner, and I know how hard it is to get adequately trained staff and how to be able to afford to pay them a wage that I really want them to be able to achieve. So I want to hear how that's being incorporated into this program.
Well, in the Department of Economic Inclusion's office department, there's an Office of Contract Compliance that deals with living wage. And for those contracts coming out of the city or that have city funding in it, we monitor that and make sure that a living wage is paid. What I would say is that there maybe should be some effort put toward finding ways that small businesses such as yourself get some sort of tax or wage break for hiring people in certain communities to give them some jobs. And those efforts usually come through federally funded initiatives. But I would think that there's some already in place here in Cincinnati, and I encourage you to take a look around at that and see if they aren't already available to some extent.
Thank you, Jenny. We appreciate the call. Let's talk with Robert in Roselawn. Good afternoon, Robert. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call. I have a two-part question. One is, as a small business enterprise registered with the city of Cincinnati, when you fill out your invitations to bid, a lot of times when I'm filling them out, a lot of questions come into my mind. And so I was wondering, with the development of the Economic Inclusion Department, have anybody thought about for small businesses, especially new small businesses, doing some type of training for how to properly fill out invitation to bid? Because if you miss one T or miss one I, dotting an I across a T, your bid may get kicked out. And then my second part is, what's the turnaround? Is there going to be anything done about how quickly bids, when you put in a bid, you get information whether you get the bid or you don't get the bid, is given back to the person that submitted it?
Well, let me take a stab at that one. First, you ask a very good question. We are in the process of establishing a business development center in the city that will be operated out of the city facilities. And one of the courses that we're going to have is showing folks how to respond to requests for bids, requests for proposals, or submitting a bid submission. We're going to teach that. We're going to go through the ifs, ands, buts, nys of those sort of things so that folks are better prepared to respond to a contract and opportunity. With regards to your other question, is the turnaround time is usually pretty set by code. It's handled by the purchasing department. You get the bid in, they evaluate it, and then it's sent back out. And if you want to get made aware of who's the winner, my understanding is that you can contact the purchasing department afterwards and they can tell you. But they can't tell you during the process because they have to wait till the decision is made.
And Harry, do we have an estimated cost for this program, for the inclusion program?
As you mentioned earlier, we're basically reconstituting what was the Office of Contract Compliance. This will add, I think this will increase the budget by about $500,000 on an annualized basis.
Dom?
Oh, $500,000 less than I can get some more money out of him. one thing that
I think that's it.
Yeah, I think that one thing that the public should know is that the city has committed a lot of resources already to getting this office running. So we have money and commitment from the mayor and the city manager to staff up. I think right now I'm in a position to be able to hire 6 new folks. So there's a commitment there. Money has been put in place to do it. And so I'm real happy about that.
And Harry, I have to think you're looking at this and that the benefits are going to outweigh the costs.
Oh, yeah, without question. The previous caller really talked about process cycle times. We're looking at procurement in general. We're looking at economic inclusion, but we're looking at our procurement process from a business standpoint. And we know that we've got a lot of work to do in terms of streamlining processes, enhancing our overall transparency, and so forth. But this stuff will return back to the city. There will be a return back to the city in terms of economic efficiencies, even more taxes, really, because once we spread the wealth out there, more people are going to be employed in Cincinnati. That's earnings tax. Our small businesses are going to do well. They're going to spend money. So there's a major multiplier effect here on several different levels.
And with the added, with all the other people getting into the process, then the city is more than likely going to get better prices because there's going to be more competition. And that's another benefit of this whole process.
Thank you, Tom. I'm the former CFO. But I should have said that.
And good luck getting more money.
See, that's how I get more money. I pat it on the back.
Well, Harry and Tom, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon. Cincinnati City Manager Harry Black and Economic Inclusion Executive Project Director Thomas Corey. Coming up, we'll look at the results of the Kentucky General Assembly, which just ended earlier this week. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.